Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we begin our program by talking about one of my favorite things. Maybe it's one of your favorites, too, and that's chocolate. There are so many varieties. You have a dark chocolate, milk chocolate, artisan chocolates. Today, we'll take a closer look at gourmet chocolate and some new ways for you to enjoy chocolate this holiday season. Everything from chocolate coconut bread to boozy bonbons with our guest, Amy Guittard, author of a new cookbook. It's called Guittard Chocolate Cookbook, Decadent Recipes from San Francisco's premium bean-to-bar chocolate company, fifth-generation chocolate maker at the Guittard Chocolate Company. Also, a board member of Creative Growth Arts Center. It's a nonprofit that serves adult artists who have developmental or mental or physical disabilities. Amy, thank you so much for spending time with us today. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here. And I have such a wonderful job because I get to learn so much, so many things I'm sure I never would have learned without this position. And for me, as I looked at your company and your family business, it was so fun to read about and so interesting. And then to see your recipes, oh, they look wonderful. But let's begin with a little about your company. This family business has been around for a long, long time.
Yeah, my great-great-grandfather, we founded the company in 1868. He actually was living in France at the time and came to San Francisco like a lot of other people did in search of gold. And he brought with him chocolate to trade for mining supplies. When he got here, he realized that he was able to get a bit more money for his chocolate than he was than he would pining for gold. So he went back to France and finessed his chocolate-making skills. His uncle had a chocolate factory back there and came back to San Francisco and opened doors right along the Embarcadero, which, if you're familiar with San Francisco, is a pretty long stretch of the city, and it's right along the water, along the bay. And way back in the day, it was a hub for all the commodities coming in from around the world. So we were down there, but then there was also a bunch of other coffee companies like Folgers and Hills Brothers, MJB, and then ourselves and Ghirardelli, another chocolate company. And we were all sort of just coexisting down there in a little commodity hub of San Francisco. And when he actually opened doors, interestingly, and I realized this in kind of doing some research, I guess my family was in stonemasonry back in France. And so he wasn't just making chocolate. Back then, a lot of folks were diversifying their portfolio of what they were making. So he was making anything that he could grind. So coffees, teas, spices, and chocolate. It wasn't until the 1906 earthquake happened that burned our factory down, forcing us to rebuild it. And it was at that time that he consolidated down just to chocolate. And well, we've been making it ever since.
Yeah, and it's been a family business this whole time, is it not?
Yeah, I represent the fifth generation along with my cousin, and then my dad is very involved. He's current president, CEO, and he's the fourth generation. So we've been in business for 140-something years, and, we're the last, all those other companies that I had mentioned, we're the last family-owned company still in existence. So
it's pretty humbling. Cool. Yeah, pretty humbling and really, really cool. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. You may have questions for Amy about the family business or about chocolate, preparing chocolate. What about baking? Maybe you have a favorite type you want to talk about or ask about. Join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. And if you go to our Facebook page, you're going to get links to the Guittard company and some recipes that Amy has very nicely given us. So I'm really pleased to have her here and to talk about chocolate and about her company and about these recipes. And how did you happen to come to put this cookbook together? It seems, I guess, a sort of a logical progression.
Well, you know, it's funny. I've worked for the company for about 4 years, but I've always been a big baker and maybe the baker of the family, one could say, and grew up baking recipes and making them from stuff that we've had in the family for years. And when I was in college, I actually set out to write the cookbook, and I had all these high hopes of being able to tell the stories along with the recipes, because having grown up baking them, there was never really, I was always curious about the history and the story behind the recipes, because that's one of the things that's so beautiful about food, is that however you make it, there's always a story behind it, whether it's where it came from or how it's celebrated. And especially something like baking, it's so often shared. And that was really the inspiration of me wanting to write the book way back when. And then when I started working here at the company, the idea never really left my brain. That summer, I spent more time surfing than actually writing. So kind of postponed it until, about a year into my working at the company. I was walking through my dad's office and kind of caught a side glimpse of a really old book that he had sitting on his desk, and was kind of paging through it and realized that it was my great-great-grandfather's formula book. And it was number of beans, bags of beans going into which product, and really like in this beautiful calligraphy. And at that moment I kind of realized, like, okay, so he had this formula book that sitting on my desk, and I, 5 generations later, am reading through it. What if we represented the flip side of the story and talked through how all those recipes come to life and how they've come to life over 146 years? And so kind of set out to write the book with that lens. And it was definitely a journey, lots of research to chat with folks who knew more about some of these stuff that we've had in our family for years.
Well, it's certainly a great story, and I'm really enjoying looking at the recipes. And I've got some very specific questions to ask you in a minute or two about some of those recipes. But Patricia's online from Bayview, so let's give her a chance to join in. Patricia, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I'm a huge fan of the chocolate, guitar chocolate, and have not been able to find it in the Milwaukee area for probably about 5 years. So maybe if Larry knows or if there's a resource, they used to have 5 to 7 pound bags at Sam's Club, and they discontinued carrying it years ago. And so I'm at a loss. So that's one question. My other question is specific about something that I love to do with the guitar chocolate. I love to make a simple ganache of heated cream and put the chocolate in and whip it, and then use it for frostings or truffles or things like that. And I've always wondered, is it safe to not refrigerate that afterwards? So if I use it as a frosting on cupcakes, should that be refrigerated? Or if I'm making them into a ball as a truffle with some liqueur or something else in it, is it safe not to refrigerate that?
Yeah, I think that you're safe up to a point. I think, first of all, thanks for calling in. I love hearing from our fans, and appreciate your love of the brand. It's always fun to hear how different people celebrate our chocolate. So thanks for calling
it's
in, first of all.
The best chocolate chip, I have to say.
And I will find an answer for you on where you can get it. I don't know off the top of my head, but I might send a note to Larry after the show, and we'll figure out a way to get resources for you guys.
I did check.
Contacting people, it was like cases or truckfuls, and 5 to 7 pounds is good. That's a stretch for me, so I love it, but not a truckful.
Well, I can tell you that Cops stores in Madison carry it, the chips. You may have a Cops in Milwaukee.
Okay.
Grocery
and that's
store.
A grocery store?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Great. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But back to your question, I think that it's always, I always am really careful about how much how long I will eat something that's using something like a cream base, just for that very reason. So, I would think that refrigerating it keeps it just a bit longer. But you also have to be careful if you're refrigerating chocolate, because the humidity can create other types of things that you might not want. For instance, in a truffle, if there's any sort of, like if you're enrobing a ganache, if there's any sort of airspace between that ganache and your shell, if any moisture gets in there, then it's going to, you know, create something that you really don't want to eat. So I always think that it's best to consume it, you know, in a relatively short amount of time. I'd say, you know, a week is fine. But after that, it's probably not great. But, you know, I think, again, you're using cream, and anytime cream is out of the refrigerated cool system. You know, and chocolate should technically be kept around 60 to 70 degrees. That's what we recommend in terms of stability and things like that. So it's kind of, you're working with a little bit of conflicting mediums there. But,
So even chocolate should be refrigerated before, like chocolate chips, if you're keeping that at a recommended temperature, it's not a preferred method, say, to keep a few bags of chocolate chips in your pantry?
No, you should definitely. I store all my stuff in a pantry in a almost like a Tupperware container will work, because chocolate absorbs any flavor around it. So if it's in your spice rack and it's near you know, cinnamon, it's going to eventually taste like cinnamon just because it soaks up everything. It's like a sponge. So, but 60 to 70 degrees is a little bit warmer than your refrigerator. So I would avoid keeping anything in the refrigerator. My best friend keeps her chips in the freezer.
And which you hate.
I think it's hilarious. I mean, I can't get her off of it because she just loves how it shards, you know, like she'll bite into it and it pieces apart, which is a beautiful thing to a certain degree, but it wreaks havoc on your chocolate and your temper. So you want a 60 to 70 degree storage space is ideal for your chocolate.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, and please
get a
Milwaukee distributor. There are a lot of us here.
Okay. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate you calling. Yeah, Cheyenne Lenz, my producer, checked and just happened to check Cops stores, and they do have your chips. But I don't know about other grocery stores, but at least in Madison, there is at least one place that carries your chocolates. How do you get? Do you distribute across the nation?
We do. Yeah, we've most of our business we provide chocolate for confectioners, pastry chefs, patisseries, things like that, and then we have our consumer line that is nationally distributed at grocery stores. Being a California girl, sometimes I don't remember all the stores for all the cities and all the states. Unfortunately, I wish I was an encyclopedia where I could just rattle it off. But alas, baby steps.
There we go. Amy Guittard, our guest today. You may want to join in as we talk with her about her book. Her book is titled Guittard Chocolate Cookbook, Decadent Recipes from San Francisco's Premium Bean to Bar Chocolate Company. Some wonderful looking recipes in there, some great photography as well. You have an interest in chocolate, I bet. What questions do you have about baking with chocolate? Do you have a favorite type of chocolate? What is it about the variety or flavoring that might make it special? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on our Facebook page title, The Larry Miller Show. And when you go there, you're going to find a link to the website for Guittard and also a couple of recipes, which we'll talk about in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Miller. Rebecca Haas, our on-air producer. Right now, having a lot of fun talking with Amy Guittard, who is the author of Guittard Chocolate Cookbook, Decadent Recipes from San Francisco's Premium Bean to Bar Chocolate Company. I'm so happy to have her with us today. Certainly, if you have a question for her, maybe an experience relating to chocolate to share, give us a call, 800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. And an email question from Grant, who says, I'm a baker and have been experimenting with chocolate as an ingredient in baking sourdough bread. Can you suggest how to use chocolate in yeasted or sourdough bread, Amy?
Oh my gosh, it's so funny that this question is coming this way, because I was just talking to our pastry chef about this. We were just in Paris for the Salon du Chocolat, the big chocolate show. And years ago, I was in Paris with a friend, and he brought me to a bakery that basically had like a laminated dough inside with a sourdough crust, and it had chocolate folded into it, and it was,
it was
magic, and I have no idea how they did it or what it was, and our pastry chef, Donald Russell, has been with us for about 10 years. He has a chapter in the book, and I, you know, have been rattling his brain to try and figure out how it would be, you know, conceived or what we could try and make with to bring me back to that memory of of having that that bread. And so we're actually in the R&D process of trying to make something of the sort. So, you know, I think when it comes to baking with chocolate, you know, a lot of times when you're making like a croissant, you put, there's a little thing, like a, it's called a baton, and it's almost like a little mini tiny bar of chocolate. It's, I'm trying to describe it. It's probably 3 inches long, and a little, has a little hump to it. And you just stick that in your dough as you are rolling it over. And that's a really easy way. It kind of distributes. Sometimes you can do two of them. And that's for laminated. I think, you know, if you are, I think with chocolate, the challenge is distribution. So with laminated, you kind of fold it in to the piece, and then it rises around it. With something like a sourdough bread, it's a little bit harder because it's dense, and you want to make sure that it's evenly distributed. You know, I always tell people to experiment with stuff. It depends on kind of what the sourdough is, and what chocolate you're interested in using. You know, chocolate bread is one of those things in Paris that is in nearly every boulangerie, and it's a solid chocolate. It doesn't have pieces of chocolate in it. It's an actual chocolate bread. So that I would, you know, you could do that with a powder. But again, if you are adding it as a dry ingredient, you're going to have to compensate a bit by bringing down the flour that you're adding, both because it's in your, it's, you know, you can change your ratios. And it's also contributing fat if you're using an unsweetened chocolate. So again, it just kind of depends on what the recipe is and what the ratios are. But if you're using a powder, again, you're going to have to pull down your other dry ingredient ratios if you're using something like an unsweetened chocolate, which you likely probably wouldn't be doing with laminated because it's moist, then you know, you'd have to pull out some of your fat just because there's fat being contributed as well. So, so baking is a science and an art, and I always tell people I love the question because it means that you're willing to experiment. Baking is intimidating unto itself, and then you add chocolate, which is also a little bit of an intimidating component. So I would recommend trying to do it with a cocoa powder and then see how it goes.
There we go. And I just wanted to mention, I think Rebecca, our on-air producer, did a little search here, and you can purchase Guittard's chocolate at Woodman's, and this is in Milwaukee, probably in Madison as well, in Woodman's, World Market, and Sendix. So there are three places in Milwaukee, and Woodman's, if they carry it there, they're probably carrying it at all their other stores across the country, across the state. Sandy,
thanks for doing the research.
Yeah, thank you, Rebecca. Sandy and Larson up next. Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Well, I was calling in to say that I get my Guittard chocolate at Woodman's.
Woo!
I want you to know I have been using your chocolate exclusively for many, many years. I had a bakery in Florida, which is not an easy place to have a bakery because of the humidity. And over the years, I've watched different programs and tasted lots of chocolates, and I like to think that I've got an educated palate. But I was disappointed when Sam's Club quit carrying the 10-pound bags of Guittard chocolate chips, and I was wondering if those are still available somewhere.
You know, those bags are a little bit hard to come by these days. So unfortunately, you know, we have our regular 12-ounce bags that are around. And were you buying the milk chips?
The milk and the semi?
Yeah. That was
one.
Yeah.
Well, appreciate your support of the brand. And what kind of bakery did you have in Florida?
You can send me a wheelbarrow full.
There you go, Amy.
I just want to thank you. I missed the first part of this show, and I was so sad when I got in the car that I had already missed a few minutes. But but it's nice to hear that this name is connected to actually to the real people.
Ah.
Oh, well. Thanks for calling in.
It definitely is. Sandy, you may want to take a look at Amy's cookbook. And again, it's called Guitar Chocolate Cookbook, Decadent Recipes from San Francisco's Premium Bean to Bar Chocolate Company, something that you may be interested in taking a look at. And that book, by the way, probably available pretty much anywhere. You can order it online or get it at your local bookstore. Amy, am I right?
Yes. You can buy it online in your local bookstores, indie bookstores. I heard through the rumor mill that Barnes & Noble carries it. It's around.
It's around. Shanti, and not sure where from, but you're up next.
Gresham.
Thanks for... From where?
Gresham, Wisconsin.
Oh, Gresham. Okay. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, my son has a soy allergy, and I was wondering if you use soy lecithin in your chocolate chips.
You know, we actually, very exciting for us, we moved to sunflower lecithin about a year and a half ago on all of our retail products. So all of our baking chips, as well as our baking bars, baking wafers, and chocolate bars for eating, all use sunflower lecithin. So I can't go as far as to say that our entire facility is soy-free, but the products that you can purchase in the marketplace are.
That's great, because I know that there's people developing a soy allergy, I think, a lot. And it's in every candy, so I'm looking forward to getting that. Okay, cool.
Oh,
all right.
Excellent.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Christine in New Berlin. Hi, thank you for calling.
You are welcome. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm looking for a solid chocolate mint patty. My mother used to make a cookie called Starlight Mint Surprise, and I remember these chocolate mint patties came in a double-barreled green and white and brown package. And I can find mint patties, some that are very waxy, so I gave up on that. And I found a decent chocolate patty, but it doesn't have mint. So do you have anything?
You know, we don't. My only suggestion, we do make a mint chip, a baking chip that has, you know, it has mint flavor in it. And so if you're feeling adventurous, you might be able to try and make one. But we don't offer anything of the sort. But, gosh, that sounds like a delicious cookie.
Yeah, it does.
It was a chocolate chip pattern, you know, chocolate chip dough. And then you put this chocolate mint patty in the center and folded the dough over it. So you got this surprise in the center of the cookie.
Oh,
my gosh. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, that does sound good. I like that idea. Speaking
of... it's funny. We have a lot of recipes, old family recipes in the book, and it's been really fun to sort of give them new life and see, you know, if there's something that an ingredient that it called for that you can't get anymore. Or it's seasonal, to try and figure out how you can work around it. So, again, if you're feeling adventurous, it might be fun to try and take a stab as you might not be able to go back in time and be as nostalgic as you had hoped. But, you know, might be worth trying to do a similar sort and maybe toss in some mint chips in some sort of a different form factor of a chocolate chip cookie and see what happens to try it out.
Sounds like a plan. And I think somewhere I saw one of, speaking of cookies, one of your favorites or maybe your favorite recipe in the book was a pumpkin chocolate chip cookie, was it not?
Yes, it's one of my favorites. I have a huge soft spot for that recipe, it was one of the first recipes that I ever sort of developed on my own, and it's, it didn't require too much R&D simply because it was adding a can of pumpkin on top. The first iteration was just adding a can of pumpkin to a chocolate chip cookie recipe that was on the back of one of our bags growing up. And kind of over the years, I tweaked the butter and added different sorts of spices and changed the cook time and made it with different types of flours. And the recipe that appears in the book is the one that has gotten kind of the most consistent thumbs up across the board from my various taste testers. And so, you know, it's got a little bit of a mix of whole wheat flour and all-purpose flour to add sort of a little bit of a texture, which pairs really nicely with that pumpkin, which is just a lot of fiber. And it kind of is, I almost describe it as like a little bit of a muffin top, which we all love, as indicated by the Seinfeld episode. But, every time I make a batch of it, I end up eating about six of them before I even make it out the door. But it's justified because it's a bunch of pumpkin, so I say that it's somewhat healthy.
Well, I tell you what, and here we are with Thanksgiving time, and we have, and thank you so much for letting us post that recipe on our Facebook page. I really appreciate that. And here we are, Thanksgiving only a couple of days away, but you could get the ingredients for that pretty quickly and put it together and have a nice little treat for Thanksgiving Day. Pumpkin chocolate chip cookies. I like that. And we also have chocolate coconut bread and chocolate caramel pecan bundt cake are the three recipes that we have from Amy's book, which is really quite, thank you so much for letting us post those up. I really appreciate it. But those pumpkin chocolate chip cookies look pretty darn good to me, too. Oh,
yeah,
man.
That's a nice array of recipes that you guys got up there. So
yeah, it's wonderful. Sam in Michigan, state of Michigan, has a question. Hi, Sam.
Hi there. My question has to do with using chocolate in hot beverages. I started a number of years ago using chocolate as a coffee substitute for unsweetened beverages, and sometimes it goes well, but sometimes I have a hard time getting everything to dissolve, and it's kind of clumpy. And I'm wondering if you have any suggestions on certain types of chocolates to use.
Yeah. Are you, what kind of chocolate are you using? Are you using baking chips, or are you using a couverture?
I typically use an unsweetened cocoa powder.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know, I think that when you are heating the milk up, do you heat it with the powder at the same time?
I usually don't. I usually pour boiling water right in.
Oh, so it's not milk based, it's water?
Right, right.
Okay. Wow, you are going for it. That is an intense dose of chocolate. You know, I think that it might behoove you to try and whisk the water in. Your ratios might be off. And so I would almost try and do it instead of just pouring the water, if I'm understanding you correctly, pouring the water over the powder. I would try and do it in a saucepan and just, like if I'm making hot chocolate, I try and whisk, I do it with milk because I'm a lover of creamy things, but I would try and whisk it, you know, in a saucepan just so you can make, you know, just kind of watch it a little bit and see and make sure you're getting the ratios properly. A lot of people will make a syrup with water, like a water-based syrup, and they'll, a water-based ganache almost. So it's a little bit of an oxymoron, but you can make that, and then you can, are you mixing it with coffee as well, or just it's its own drink?
Sometimes I'll add milk in later as well.
Okay, yeah. So it's almost like a syrup, and it'll taste a little bit watered down, but it's just a concentrated way of doing it, and that way you can again manage it a bit better. But I know a lot of coffee houses do that. They'll make like a just mix some hot water with powder and make it into like a syrup, and then mix that in. So again, it's like you'd be diluting a larger amount at a later time, but.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call.
Yeah. Good luck.
Good luck. Amy Guittard, our guest today, fifth generation chocolate maker at the Guittard Chocolate Company. Her new cookbook is called Guittard Chocolate Cookbook, Decadent Recipes from San Francisco's Premium Bean to Bar Chocolate Company. And it's a wonderful book. I hope you have a chance to take a look at it. Join in with your questions or comments about chocolate. Maybe you have some suggestions. Maybe you have some questions about preparing chocolate or different types of chocolate that you might use. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And I've got a question for you, Amy. My daughter's school, for a fundraiser, we're doing a wine and chocolate tasting, and we have a featured chocolatier, Gail Ambrosius, who is one of the wonderful chocolatiers in Wisconsin, and one of the best in the country, I think, according to the award she's won. She's going to be featured, but then there will be maybe another 10 of us who are not chocolatiers, but who will be making chocolate, something chocolatey. For this tasting, and I was looking through your book and thinking, which of these? Now, we have about 150 people who will be attending this, my guess is. What's your suggestion for something like that, a tasting?
Well, you know, it always depends on the kind of the experience that you want someone to have. We do a lot of events out there, some of which are in partnership with someone who's making our chocolate in an application, so say mm-hmm. like a baker or a confectioner. I always find that it's really fun to taste and maybe this is just because we work for a chocolate company, you taste the actual chocolate by itself, and then you taste it in whatever it's been used in. And if you're really trying to learn about the different types of chocolate out there, that's one of the better ways to try and explore different types of styles, different flavor components of chocolate, and how you can bring them to life in an application. And so, you know, I think if you're looking to make something really simple, one of the things that is fun to do is just to make like one of the bonbons. The boozy bonbon recipe in there calls for Grand Marnier, but you don't have to make it with that. You could, select maybe three different types of chocolate, and you know, all of our chocolates have lots of different flavor profiles, so mm-hmm. you could select a variety of those and make them into a series of bonbons and allow people to kind of taste the different the differences in them. Our pastry chef actually did something the other day where he made like a four different bonbons, each using a single origin that we make for our pastry chef line, and it was the ganache really helped carry that flavor and made it really apparent as to the differences between the different bonbons that he made. And it's just a fun sort of journey for your palate to go on. So
wow, I'm going to that bonbon section of your book and take a look. Oh man, well, you know, in preparing, you use, of course, we use lots of things. Ingredients. A butter is one, and you recommend unsalted butter when baking. Is that correct?
I do, yeah. I think, you know, one of the things that is really important in baking is being able to manage the flavor that comes throughout the process. And using unsalted butter allows you to add salt at a later time and be able to manage it. You don't know, different brands add different amounts of salt. And so just using a straight up unsalted butter will ensure that the salt that you do add is, at least this is in my world, but the salt that you do add is consistent from recipe to recipe.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then in terms of eggs, you recommend a very fresh egg.
I do, yeah. You know, I think that eggs are so important. Even if you are like hard boiling an egg, the difference between like an organic egg versus a conventional egg, if you're taking the shell off, not, you know, not telling everyone they just need to use organic everything, but the quality of the ingredients that go into what you're making is so important in yielding a great result. We kind of take on that belief when we make chocolate. Your end product is only as good as the ingredients that go into it, which is why we source really high quality, high flavor beans that are really consistent. And so the same thing goes when you're baking. You want to make sure that you're using really high quality ingredients, really fresh eggs. You know, you can
leave
them out and get to room temperature. Flour, same type of thing. A lot of people have different preferences on what flour they use. I like to play around with different types of flour. As I said, that pumpkin chocolate chip cookie recipe uses a little bit of whole wheat flour. You have to be careful because some flours are more dense than others, and some have different sorts of flavors if you're starting to really get into alternative flours. You know, buckwheat flour is really strong, and so, you know, you're really going to want to use just a tiny, tiny bit of it, and a little will go a long way. So.
And the other thing, item is sugar, and there are lots of different types of sugar, actually.
Yeah, there are, and you know, your granulated sugar is kind of the go-to, and your brown sugar is certainly has a it's. You know, caramelized a little bit more because that's where the brown comes from. So it carries that sort of maple note. The world is your oyster when it comes to ingredients and figuring out, you know, what your preferences are as well as kind of what works well in a recipe. That's always the dance that you've got to do, whether you're making chocolate or baking with chocolate is, you know, what is the science component of it and then where does the artistry come in?
Bob in Marshfield, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I wonder if you could direct me to a good fudge recipe. I understand the physics of cooling and agitation, and when I make fudge, it generally tastes pretty good, but I'm always right on the very edge of melting at room temperature or becoming gritty. Recipe from yourself
would be
appreciated.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think with anything, it's a matter of patience and, melting things evenly. You know, I think that, when you're, you know, do you use a hot water bath or are you melting it in like a microwave?
Micro, usually.
Yeah, so a hot water bath, as laborious as it might seem, microwave is really easy to almost burn your chocolate, and it's such a sensitive product. So I might try and just explore doing things a little bit more slowly and gingerly to make sure that when your chocolate and your milk and your butter are melting together, that you are doing it at a really low temperature to kind of respect the delicacy of what you're trying to do. And so even with a hot water bath, if your heat is just even a touch too high, it's just going to scald your chocolate. So, and if you're using a microwave, small bursts, I know it's so tempting to just nuke it all at once, but small bursts and kind of melting it, and you'll notice even as the chocolate warms, it'll help melt the other, it'll help melt the remainder of it. So even if it's not fully melted, you can use the heat that's being held up in the solid chocolate that's partly melted to kind of melt in the rest of it, if that makes sense.
Thank you so much. Thanks for that question, Bob. Appreciate it very much. And Amy, boy, this has been a real pleasure for me. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today and for talking about your company and your cookbook and chocolate. It's been a wonderful 45 minutes. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It was a pleasure. And thanks for all the great questions. And happy Thanksgiving to everyone. Eat lots of chocolate.
Yeah, to you as well. Thanks, Amy. Amy Guittard is the author of, she's a fifth generation, by the way, chocolate maker from the Guittard Chocolate Company. Her book, Guittard Chocolate Cookbook, Decadent Recipes from San Francisco's Premium Bean to Bar Chocolate Company. And we have three of her recipes, pumpkin chocolate chip cookies, chocolate coconut bread, and chocolate caramel pecan bun cake, up on our Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. So if you want to take a look at those, I certainly and highly encourage you to do it and take a look at her cookbook as well. It's a really nice cookbook. Coming up, boy, this is so much fun to talk about food. And we're going to continue talking along the food line next with a special guest, Peggy Woodward, food editor for Taste of Home Brands. She's our guest next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.